Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
We're great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, your reaction to what has happened since we last spoke last week, the deals for both Tua down in Miami and Jordan Love with the Green Bay Packers.
the Love one is really interesting to me, just because, I mean, we talked about on the show last week the element of a short window and then a massive payday, you know, coming out of it. And I think that really opened some eyes. There's been a few contracts, not just quarterback contracts. It's funny, I was talking to a couple of GMs and some front office guys about the wide receiver contracts and kind of how we ended up where we did. And everybody has a pretty good read on it. It's not like people are just like, well, that's how it goes. No, they're actually trying to figure out, like, how are we getting here? Like, what is going on here? And, you know, I think the Love contract, it makes some teams nervous because you're just looking at such a limited window, and you're basically rolling the dice on, a proven commodity coming out of this, when realistically you've got about a half a season. And it was funny because, I'm in Denver now, and I was coming here and I was talking to GM about coming to Denver, and we were talking about the Jordan Love contract. And he said he had heard someone in his market sort of say, well, oh, they're all dice rolls. Like, you know, look at what happened with the Russell Wilson contract in Denver. And he kind of laughed and he was like, it's not even remotely the same thing. He said, Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl, should have won two Super Bowls, had a huge long resume. You can't sit there and compare someone who's got a laundry list of accomplishments in the game, who's a veteran, brings all these things to the table, to someone who put together an absolutely stellar half of a season and then, you know, a decent, you know, run in the playoffs. And I can see why there would be, you know, some consternation, but I will tell you this. I think a lot of people are drawing it back to the contract Trevor Lawrence signed. Like, it's like once Lawrence did that deal, it put everyone else into the position of, okay, it's you're buying upside now. You're just buying upside. It doesn't have to be full accomplishment. It's not like when, we've gotten to the point of year three and you can see these massive strides and guys have started three straight years or whatever. I think the only other thing I would put into this is, and I had a coach bring this up. He said, hey, look at Wentz. Look at when Wentz did his deal in Philly. He said, you could have argued that Wentz really didn't have enough to ink the deal that he ultimately did, but Philly was trying to get ahead of the market and they did a massive deal with him and it didn't work out. And he's like, so it does happen. The only difference is, you know, quarterback salaries and really salaries across the board have just, you know, flown astronomically over the last couple of seasons. And my question to you guys is this, and I truly believe this, all these massive deals that are being done by quarterbacks, one of these is going to be a huge mistake. I just don't know which one. But we know it's going to happen, right? They're not all going to be justified. You can't sit here and go, every single quarterback who's making 50-plus million a season is actually going to justify that. No. Someone, maybe more than one person, is going to fall flat on their face. They're going to regress. They're going to hit a wall. You know, coordinators are going to figure them out. And that's going to change things. I can remember all the years I've covered the league, there have been different quarterbacks who have had seasons and periods where they looked hot as a pistol and looked like had they had an opportunity to sign a contract coming out of that, would have gotten massive deals. Unfortunately, they had to go through one more season, you know, to get there. And that ambiance and that, you know, shine kind of wore off. So I'm a firm believer that there's going to be a mistake here. And I wonder if that's going to lead to maybe some corrective measures in the future.
Well, I think it's more than one, right? I mean, so it doesn't even have to be fall flat on your face, does it? Like if Tua is pretty good, or Trevor Lawrence is pretty good, but they never sniff a title. Isn't that also a mistake? I mean, ultimately, you're paying this money for all these guys to be better than that, and only a handful ever will be, right?
Sure. Well, you become, I think, Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, right? Where it's like, he's paid, you know, when he gets there, he's got a contract that puts him at the top of the league. And then it's like, he was paid a ton of money there for, you know, for the window that it was. Now, I mean, shoot, now looking back, it's like, oh, now it all seems economical. I was kind of laughing with the Cardinals when I was there about the Kyler deal, about, oh, geez, like, that deal doesn't look nearly as bad as, you know, people thought it was from the past regime. But, you know, Kirk Cousins for the window that he was at Minnesota, if you go back and look at what he got paid and you go, okay, what were the results ultimately, what was produced, you would say that did not work, that they spent all that money trying to do what they could, and ultimately it was never brought together. Now, you can't just blame that all on Kirk. There's a lot of different things that go into, you know, building a team, but that's also part of what we're talking about with these quarterback contracts. I just came out of San Francisco, and you hear all these people, you know, who are upset about Brandon Ayuk, and they're like, why? You know, they're going to get the deal done. They've always done it. You know, they did it with Debo. You know, Trent Williams is holding out. Like, what's the deal here? Like, why can't they just get these people paid? And I'm like, well, there's something coming. Like, do you not know that the landscape's about to change for the organization? Because Brock Purdy is going to get a massive contract extension next offseason if he just replicates what he did in 2023. He doesn't even have to expand on it. I think he just replicates it. He's going to get a deal that's going to put him near the top of the league, if not the top of the league, in terms of highest paid player. And you know, so it's just sort of this, this idea of, like, you know, why are you paying it? Is it the mentality of, look, contract negotiation agents, I get it. I have a litany of agents who are sources, and, you know that their approach is when they go to the table. If it's somebody who's in the conversation, say at like top 10, you just try to say they're at the top of the pile. You always try to make them the highest paid at their position every time they come up, if they're in that sort of realm. But I think it's going to take a team crashing and burning and somebody just going, you know what, we're not doing it. We're just not doing it. And that's the line drawn in the sand. And maybe that's what Dallas is doing with Dak. I think Dak will get done. Now that I've been through Dallas and kind of looked at it, I don't think he's the one that ultimately they would sacrifice. I don't think that. But they're also in a position where, you know, Dak holds the cards and could leave. But if he leaves, I do think that's the element where you saw a franchise go, nope, we just have too many things we have to do here, and we can't just make a guy a $57 million a year quarterback, or, you know, $60 million a year quarterback. We have to change.
You mentioned spending time in San Francisco. I mean, you can make the argument, I don't even know if it's an argument, that they've had the most talented roster the last few years. Now, they've run into Patrick Mahomes a couple times in the Super Bowl, and that kind of is what it is. But how much pressure is on them to break through and actually get it done and have a championship to show for the team that they've built around Brock Purdy in the quarterback position?
Oh, there's no question. Their GM, John Lynch, I was talking to him, and I said, hey, I remember when you were on these Tampa teams, you know, that with Tony Dungy that were trying to break through, and you're near the top for a number of years. And I said, you know, it gets a little dicey when you're right there, but you're not doing it. And, you know, Lynch is like, yeah, you know, there is an element of when you're that talented and you're that close. He said, you know, one of the things, kind of phrased it his own way, but it was like, you don't want to get rated before you win the prize, right? Like, you win the Super Bowl, you know, you come out of it and people are going to raid your staff. They're going to try to poach your players in free agency. You know, some different things are going to happen, but you got the payoff. You did the thing that now you pay the price for on the other side. You don't want to pay the price before you win the thing. And that's kind of, when you look at the 49ers, what you're sort of dealing with the Ayuk situation, and then, you know, Trent Williams wanting to be redone, is that there's just money and other facets that are starting to pop up. And then also you're starting to see some veterans where you're like, okay, they're getting to this point in the window where how many more years can you expect them to stay healthy and have top level production? Like, Christian McCaffrey's one where, you know, it's not like he's an old guy, but you've been blessed to get a lot of health out of him that he didn't have in that Carolina franchise. And so at some point you just worry that the critical mass arrives before you win the Super Bowl and it breaks. And so far that hasn't happened with the 49ers. And I think when I came out of there, the practice I was at, Purdy threw 4 interceptions. Should have been 5. And he started off hot, like great, looked great first half practice, second half practice, throws 4 picks, should have been 5. I talked to him afterward, and I was just like, hey, this is a matter of you like pushing the envelope. He's like, yeah. He's like, look, you got to figure out what you can or can't do in practices now, and this is the time to do it. If I turn it over now, it is what it is. I can't do it during the regular season, but let's figure it out now. So you see, certain aspects of the growth, but I also walked away going, they got to get Ayuk. Like, he has to be on the field for this team. It's too important. Ricky Pearsall, the rookie that they drafted in the first round, you can see like he's super fun, highly tuned. It's funny. Somebody mentioned is he like a Ferrari where you're like always worried about, he's fast and he's sleek and it's a lot of fun to watch him, but are you always worried about a soft tissue injury or, little things always, nagging at him, which he's already had there. They need Ayuk now. The window's now. This year's now. And I almost looked at the 49ers like I looked at the Cowboys last year, where it was like everything's come together. Dak's having almost an MVP season. It's right there. Every player is playing at a top level. They absolutely got to get this together. They didn't. And now what are you looking at with Dallas? Everybody's saying, I went through there and I get it, and it's going to continue to come out of there. Like, the idea that this is it in Dallas. Like, if this doesn't work, if this is the payoff isn't this year, everything could change. Quarterback, coach, all kinds of things could be different next year. And I don't want to say that's where the 49ers are at right now, but Trent Williams isn't going to be there forever. And, McCaffrey's health, who knows if that lasts forever, and maybe Ayuk stays or doesn't. Deebo Samuel's another guy who's well into his prime and plays a very physical, style of ball. So there's a lot up in the air, I think, for the 49ers right now. And I think that pressure that you talk about, a lot of it's going to be on Purdy's shoulders, because he's the one who I think could really be that sort of the finisher that ends up giving them the Super Bowl.
So I'm really enjoying your little note, your little notepads on Twitter, Charles.
I see. You know what's great about this? You'll enjoy this. Like, I always go through, and I do every camp I go through. I used to do, I just on Twitter X, I do the, here's all these things I'm seeing, and it would just be a different tweet every time, and it'd be a thread or whatever. And so I said, well, they're like, can you do that? Let's figure out a way to do that and put it on the site or whatever. And so they come up with this idea of a notebook, and it's like this new idea. It's like, oh, this is a new idea. I'm like, this is not a new idea. Like, we did this like 15 years ago. I'm like, we keep doing these things over. And I'm like, all I need to do is think back 20 years ago and reintroduce that idea that we had.
You should start a blog. How about a blog? Have you heard of a blog?
Absolutely. Podcast, right?
Yeah. There you go. So you're with the Broncos. I'll be interested next week to hear what you think of Bo Nix. You're in Denver today with the Broncos. With Texans, Rams, Cowboys, Chargers, Cardinals, Niners. So, I mean, I have to ask, how's Coach Weirdo doing? How's the Harpster?
Oh, geez. Yeah, he's good. He's funny. It was every guy you talk to in the organization, they have some version of, he's his own guy. their own way. They all kind of say it. My favorite though was being there. They have this train, like it's like an elevated metro train that runs by practice constantly. Like, it goes by. I felt like every 15, 20 minutes, I'm watching like a metro train go by practice, and there's like nobody on it. Like, I'm like, what is this train for? Like, it reminds me of the train in Detroit that you and I would be familiar with that goes around the city and rarely anyone's ever on it.
The people mover?
The people mover.
I used it during the NCAA tournament, but yes, point taken.
Right. During an event, it gets used, but otherwise, like a Tigers game or whatever. But this is by practice. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, nobody's on that thing. When the Chargers were in San Diego, they used to practice below this huge stone bluff, and there would always be like these conspiracy theories in the organization about like, do we have opponents taping us in like playoff practices and stuff from this bluff? And I'm like, I guarantee you there's going to be conspiracies about people being on the train. But Harbaugh starts talking about this train, and he says, he's like, I never see people on that train. He's like, I actually saw somebody today. And he goes on this whole riff about the train. And then he goes, the Harbaugh fan, we're train people. He's like, my grandpa was a brakeman. Of course. Like, this is just the weirdest. There's no anecdote he doesn't have, and you watch one practice, and I went back and I got the mic'd up practice and I watched it. And I can't even – he's got to have 100 a practice. It's crazy the number of anecdotes he's using with players and staff and all these different things. But, yeah, I mean, they're – you know, look, they're hyped. I mean, they're definitely – I think everybody feels really, you know, energized under him. And I think the biggest thing probably coming out of there that I really had running through my mind was – well, really two things. The GM he's attached to, Joe Ortiz, who comes out of Baltimore, the two remind me a lot of when Pete Carroll and John Schneider got together in Seattle. Because Pete, you know, Pete's, we always laugh about the whole chewing 100 pieces of gum and like being crazy and this like all exuberant, taking his shirt off, doing crazy stuff. But being like a guy who loves to teach and he's always running around energetic in practice, that's a lot like what Harbaugh's like. And then Schneider came from sort of a Green Bay, you know, he had worked under Ron Wolf. He had worked under Ted Thompson. This idea of being a builder. Let's build from inside. When we get to the Super Bowl, you look at our roster, 90% of it will be drafted. You know, it's all going to be draft and build. They're very similar in terms of, you know, those ways. Not a perfect one for one, but it does remind me a lot of what Seattle put together. And then the other thing, I think Harbaugh – is going to be able to impart on Justin Herbert as he gets older, how he leads and how he demands from teammates. That's a big topic of conversation constantly around the Chargers. Is how does Herbert lead? Just pulling stuff out of teammates. And I think he'll get there. He reminds me a little of Matt Ryan. Like when Matt Ryan came in with the Falcons, you were kind of like, geez, I don't know. He seems kind of, is he really, you know, going to be commanding enough with guys? And as he got older, though, yeah, you would hear stories where it's like, no, he has no problems with that. I think Herbert will get there. I just don't think he's there now.
So, okay, this brings me to a quick micro question for you on this, just because it just came to mind as you're talking about the Chargers, and it relates to the Titans, because a guy who has been definitely flashing here, and you can, and everybody has known all along he's had a lot of talents, Kenneth Murray, an inside linebacker. I'm just wondering if you had any, because yeah, a lot of the talk is the scheme. You know, the scheme there didn't fit him. That maybe the scheme here fits him. But have you come across anything like that with him? Any you know, conversations or any knowledge on Murray? What happened there with the Chargers?
I haven't, and it was you know, surprising that I think honestly, I really truly believe this. I think a lot of it was just they found themselves in a cap crunch and they had to make a bunch of decisions. And I think that was why when I went in, I was like, man, a lot of talent went out the door. And Murray was one of those guys where I'm like, geez, like it's a little surprising. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, we had wide receivers, obviously, were the big ones, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. You know, Murray was a big one. But if you go down the list, you know, Austin Eckler, they really, a lot of guys, you know, from that roster last year, they had to move on from. But I do think it was, part of it was just cap, where they wanted to go. I don't know how much it had to do with scheme with Murray. I hadn't heard anything that they felt like.
He was just kind of an underwhelming player there, right? Just compared to the expectations coming out of Oklahoma.
Compared to the expectations, yeah. Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, any time a guy's highly drafted, you know, comes to the table, you expect a ton out of him. They were very excited about him when he got in there. And, you know, obviously never really turned the corner. And, you know, so maybe that's part of it. But, yeah, I mean, schematically, Jesse Minner, some of the things that maybe Minner brings to the table, you know, Murray wasn't a perfect fit. But I do think, too, like I said, I think part of it's cap, part of it's scheme, part of it's culture. It's, you know, a multitude of different things, really. So, but somebody could be asking me the same question, maybe, and I hate to. What if Treylon Burks goes somewhere next year, you know, and Treylon Burks pops and is having a great camp and somebody says, what happened? Like, what was they not like him? What was the problem? Why didn't he work out in Tennessee? I think it's kind of a similar situation to that.
He's playing well, by the way.
He is playing. He looked pretty good yesterday.
I heard Dez Bryant was really high on him.
He was. On the Arizona front. So you spent time with the Cardinals, you know, Kyler Murray and what he's going to be there. Fascinating to me this year, but what's been the talk on Marvin Harrison Jr. to this point in camp?
Oh, they're. I was talking to their OC Drew Petzing, and he said two things that just absolutely stuck out. He was like, "You literally don't have to tell him anything." He's like, "You don't tell him anything. He just does what he's supposed to do. Everything that he's supposed to do. You never It's like, I never find myself having to tell him, hey, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And then he said the second Harrison walked in, it was like a 5 to 10 year veteran, like, mentality, like the way he went about his business, how he does things. He said, Harrison's quiet. He's like, you know, he doesn't, like, in terms of, you know, you expect somebody coming in at that pick with that reputation, and he's a wide receiver, you know, the showboaty quality that we expect from wide receivers. They, you know, they all the top ones have. I mean, Justin Jefferson, let's be honest, wide receiver was nothing but, you know, a fun kind of ride watching him be who he was. Harrison Jr. has not been like that at all. Like, he's just completely understated, goes about his deal. And when you watch him out there, like watching him in practice, it's just so still. There's such a stillness to him. Everything that he does when you watch him on the field, he looks almost like what Pet Singh was saying. He looks like he's been there forever. And he kind of said something interesting. It was funny. He was talking about, like, the expectations and, Larry Fitzgerald, you're really the biggest guy to come in. There's sort of these Larry Fitzgerald expectations. And, you know, he kind of laughs. He's like, you know, my whole life I've been compared to, like, a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Yeah. He's like, my dad, you know, he's like, this isn't anything new to me. So it was another thing, too. It was the first time, like, when you talk to him expansively for the first time, it's shocking just how it's just not what you expect. Like, he's just very, everything about him is just so much more muted than you would expect. So much more calm and thought out, and just the way he does, it's just weird. I'm not used to it at all. And I struggle to think of the last receiver who's come in who just seems like he's been there forever. You know how when we talk to veterans long enough, after a while, they become a little boring to us, where it's like, oh my God, like, this guy knows everything. You know, he always says the things he's supposed to say, or there's a little bit of, like, pre-programming that has been there from the years and years of doing it.
Oh yeah.
He feels like he's like that now. It's weird to be like that and know that how young the kid is.
I feel like there's, I don't know, you tell me, I just feel like there's just been more of that in general with, like, top athletes in the last few years.
We watched the Hard Knocks in season thing, which, by the way, a lot of teams talking about that, and I don't think that any team thinks it's reflected well on the Giants. There's a lot of, like, kind of like, you know, responses when you sort of bring it up with other teams. But when Joe Shane got coached up, you know, going out before the combine, I think, yeah, there's a ton of that now happens, not only with kids, but it doesn't start now. Like, I think they're doing that in college. You know, they're doing it in some respects, even in high school. And so now you're starting to see that filtered out, where there's just more of a, they know what they're supposed to answer. They know how they're supposed to say it. Some guys follow it and just sort of do it to a T, and that's really what we get. And then other guys, I think it's more of sort of the traditional thing that we're used to over the decades of guys, you know, just being who they are and letting it fly. But yeah, it can be boring. I hate to say it. I was kind of like, man, Harrison's kind of a boring person to talk to. I'm like, you know, you're so excited to go and watch him, and he's fun to watch on the field. But then you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Like, this isn't the most exciting, like, conversation I've had with a guy. And then you think of Marvin Harrison, his dad.
Yeah, he was pretty quiet, like, too, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. It was just like, wow, this is really, really similar. And that's probably the only thing when you look at the two people that's similar, is because he does not look like his dad at all. He's like, you know, not thin, like, tall, just big. Everything about him does not scream his dad, except for when he opens his mouth.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. On the program. Charles, thanks as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and have fun in Denver. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it, guys. I want you to know, right before I came on, I did my 24-hour check-in with Southwest.
Wow.
It felt good, didn't it?
Yeah. I got the
A22. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, nailed it.
That is strong. 16 is the best you could possibly do. That is strong. Wow.
The design seating thing is not going to work. I'm just going to go ahead on the record and say that now, that all the business class passengers that I know in my life are not like, oh, I'm totally going to fly Southwest now.
Yeah.
Just don't see it happening.
So frustrating.
Can't wait to see Rex Road fight somebody in the airport. It's going to be great.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Charles.
I'll talk to you later.
Charles Robinson, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.